Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's me, Simon Cardy, with Matt Jones.
Hello.
Hello. And Wesley Yenpool.
Hello.
Hello. We're in the office. First time in the IGN office, Wes. How's this been for you? Exciting?
It's exciting. It's very intimidating because you actually have a proper space to record stuff.
We've got equipment. We've got stuff.
Yeah.
We've got free
sofas.
Water. Mm-hmm. I know. It's good. I mean, free water. I feel like, I'm going to put this, I think everyone in the world should be able to access
brave.
Free water, free clean water. I'm putting that out into the world because I'm just that sort of brave human. We are halfway through this year, pretty much, maybe in a day or two, exactly halfway through this year. So we're going to have a little look back, look forward on the year. We're going to list, you know, our favourite game, film and TV show from the year so far. And then maybe our most, definitely our most anticipated game, film and TV show for the rest of the year. Maybe we'll give a few shout outs because, you know, you can't restrict us to one, can you?
As soon as we get started, you can't stop us.
Oh, God, once we get rolling, we're like a big old rock going down a hill.
We're like a Katamari.
But we sound better than a rock rolling down a hill, hopefully. Let's just get going. I mean, it's not. It's quite warm in here, isn't it?
Is it putting you off your game a little bit?
It takes a lot to put me off my game, but mild humidity can do it.
send us an email. What's the ideal podcasting temperature?
I would say 17 degrees, but dry, whereas this is kind of, I feel like it's about 20. I'm going to say it's up to like 23 in here and muggy. Mm. And I don't like muggy weather. Let's start with you, Matt. Let's do our games first. Why not? Because IGN, yeah, we're mostly known for games, aren't we? I suppose. I'm just waffling like
so I've
shit.
Spent quite a lot of time in my career trying to do my best to help out indie games. Like, you know, try and make sure that people are paying a lot of attention to some stuff that's maybe not getting the most attention possible. And yet this year, you know, I just want to talk about Zelda.
it's not a surprise, is it? Yeah. I mean, Tears of the Kingdom, pretty good game.
Yeah, pretty excellent.
Indie game that could.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I feel like I joined IGN, right? So I've got that feeling in the back of my brain that it's like, oh, did I sell out? I don't care about indie games anymore. But then it's like, well, no, I just, just play Zelda. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Like, Wes, I don't know. Did you play Zelda?
No, I don't have a Switch. I fell off Nintendo after the Wii.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I haven't been back since.
Well, why don't we wax lyrical about Tears of the Kingdom? This is also going to be my pick for game. So, maybe I'll mention another one, but we can talk about Zelda. Well, it's your pick, so maybe you should go first.
It's the only game that I've had all year where I've, one that we'll talk about in a little bit, where I've been just like sneaking time during the day, where it'll just be like, oh, I've got
slacking
a little
off work, is what you're saying.
No, I'll get the work done. Like during my lunch break, we'll be like counting down the minutes to when it's like possible for me to just go in and like grind some like shrines out and just explore to a new place. And it, like, that's the feeling, you know, when something just gets its hooks into you like that. But it's like, it's got the good bittiness, but it's also got stuff that you can invest yourself in if you've got time.
Did you just find yourself playing and just going, ooh, bitty?
Exactly.
The whole time.
Much like David Williams back in the day.
Yeah. God, when's the last... I can't remember. When's the last time anyone made a Little Britain reference?
As an aside, there's a really good account on Twitter that posts like moments in UK history that are told through like Getty images from like back in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. And it posted one of... it was the bear from Bow Selector at a Nintendo DS event.
Of course.
And it is.
Oh, I saw that.
It's just, it's a time capsule. Like, I just tried to imagine Nintendo doing exactly the same thing.
If I'm right,
it's
surrounded by about 5 semi nude women.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah.
That, what, I was going to say what a time, but
it was
a
moment.
It was, it was definitely a moment in time.
It's just utterly unrecognizable. Like, you'd never do it now. And it's so, like.
It was only, what, 15 years?
Yeah, it really wasn't that long. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Zelda's good, isn't it?
So what they should do to sell Zelda is they should get Lee Francis back in.
So is it well documented? I like Breath of the Wild. I feel like it's overdone how much I don't like it. I really like it. I think Breath of the Wild is a brilliant game. It's just not, I don't think it should be heralded. In my opinion, it's not like the all-time best game ever. Tears of the Kingdom, though, I think fits that bill more for me. I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I finished it recently after about 80 hours, and I didn't think I'd spend that long playing Tears of the Kingdom. And it's not just... I was trying to think, what is it about Tears of the Kingdom that made me enjoy it more than Breath of the Wild? And I think, fundamentally, the fuse and Ultra Hand abilities and recall, I just enjoy much more than the abilities that were in Breath of the Wild. But I think it's the story, because this story is much better. The last, like, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours of story of that game are just brilliant. There's like moments, like even in a game that's consistently surprising you, I didn't expect, you know, I wasn't hit emotionally by it, but I was, you know, it was hitting certain notes that I didn't expect a Zelda game to reach. And yeah, the last like battle and like bit after it is just, it's quite stunning. But yeah,
I look forward to that.
I'm surprised. Have you not finished it yet?
No.
I'll spoil it for you if you want.
Exactly. Lay it on me.
Have you got the Master Sword yet?
I don't have the Master Sword, but I know that
you're in
you
for
do.
A treat.
Did you not get it early on?
So you have it when you're in the early section, but you lose it.
Oh, they Metroidvania.
Yeah. Well, you don't even really have... You've got a broken version of it that will eventually be fixed. And it is interesting how you get it. I'm aware of how it's done in this game, but I just not... So take the plunge, but I guess you don't take the plunge. You
I
do
did,
the opposite.
I did get it kind of slightly earlier than you're probably meant to get it along the main path. Like, I went out of my way to get it. Mm-hmm. And it was still a great moment when I got it, but I do think where it actually naturally is part of the main quest would hit more and it would make more sense. But yeah
absolutely.
Surprise, Zelda is a very good game.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the story we did about the player who created working scales in the game? And
Link is 10 apples.
And it turns out Link weighs 10 apples.
That's not a lot, is it? Or are they big? Or Hyrule apples very heavy?
They're like made of tungsten.
Are these pre-baked apples?
True, they lose some of their weight when they're... Yeah, that's good. Yeah, how many baked apples is it? Oh, we've got to get back on the scales,
Is a baked apple, I imagine, is lighter because it's losing all the water, isn't it? So you'd think naturally the baked apple is
lighter. I've always thought it was really weird how food gains calories when you cook it. You'd think that it would lose it. But
yeah, because of the...
Yeah.
Maybe that explains how it can weigh as much as Link.
The thing I love about that as well is that all boulders are the same weight. It doesn't matter what size they are. They all weigh the same.
Mm. I just like to think everything in that world weighs 10 apples. Whatever you put on there, it's 10 apples.
Yeah. Even an apple.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
That would be... I mean, this is why it's the best game of the year so far, because you can weigh apples in it.
It makes sense when you do it.
Players are trying to come up with a standard unit of weight measurement for just for the game, so that they can start weighing everything.
The universal apple measurement.
Or Link.
Exactly.
How many Links?
Wes, is your favourite game of the year so far Street Fighter?
Yes. I mean, of course it is.
Yeah,
it was always going to be.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Is that your pick, or are you going to pick something else?
No, I'm going to pick Street Fighter. It would be either Diablo.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be utilizing the fact that I'm here, so let's go. What do you like? You like Drive Impact? You think the parries are cool?
Yeah, although, you know, lately I've been having worrying thoughts that drive impact might be a bit of a mistake because it's just annoying me so much. It's annoying me because I'm old now and my reactions aren't what they were when I was playing Street Fighter in my 20s. And so people are just throwing this move out with like two hits of armor and my, you know, old man fingers are just not reacting quick enough to do another one in response. And it, oh God, even now thinking about it and it's not actually happening makes me just want to, I'm just so
dreading old man fingers. As in me getting them myself, not the new old David man's Firth fingers. Cartoon. Yeah. It reminds me, exactly.
That's a nightmare.
It reminds me of, I just recently, last night in fact, started rereading Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy, RIP to the GOAT. And that sounds like a description he would do. It's like the old man fingers. I fear the old man fingers.
I fear mine are already upon me.
I think that like Drive Impact, I think is like predictable, but it's also like counterable
for a fighting game noob like me. I've played approximately 1 to 2 hours of Street Fighter 6, by the way. Is Drive Impact, here's how little I know, is Drive Impact basically the special, is that the lower special bar or the top special bar? Isn't there two?
It uses the special bar at the top, but it's the big heavy attack that is like an instant kind of like a brief stun state. You'll get to like perform your combo immediately after that. And the thing about it is that it's like this perfect hit. It will do this like lockdown, but it is got like a really high startup animation. So the best possible thing to do is just do it back to somebody that does it to you first. And so you basically play the game now trying to bait it out of the other person so that you can respond. But there are other ways to counter it as well. So it's the new addition to this game that makes it interesting. And yet now people are kind of figuring it out. Like, I watched a lot of pro games. I watched the CEO.
It was amazing.
That comeback from Pink. Man, it was really good. Nuts. If you haven't checked it out, go check it out. I noticed that not a lot of them are actually doing Drive Impact because it's too difficult to do in neutral.
Well, and they know that they're playing against players who can react to it, right? So it's almost like, it's almost pointless. Although it's still used a lot when your opponent's in burnout. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's like trying to, I think eventually this game will boil down to meter management, where it's about working out burnout.
Here's my equivalent. Is it a little bit like the power shots in FIFA? Like, no one at the pro levels using those, are they? Because you can block all those.
I haven't actually kept up with FIFA, pro FIFA, but I guess
I'm
so.
Neither am I. I'm just assuming they don't, because they're so
like
easy.
Like with everything, it's just so situational. It really does come down to like, can I get away with this? Like, the thing that I'm doing more than I ever did in Street Fighter as well, from watching a lot of pro stuff now, is that I'm shimmying out of the way a lot where I should have, like, constantly been doing footsies. It my entire career. Like dashing back instead of going for a grab immediately to put them in like a disadvantageous position. Like, there's nothing like it than like really feeling as if you're getting inside their head and just doing really annoying stuff. And this game's like better than it's ever been for doing really annoying shit.
I've only spent 2 hours playing, but about an hour of that was creating a character in the World Tour mode. So I created the most horrific looking man in the world. He has a moustache and like a green like bowl cut. But then also I set like all the limbs to like as thin as possible, but the hands and feet as big as possible, and then the shoulders as big. It looks quite disgusting.
There's some nightmarish things you can do with that.
Yeah. I love the idea that you've made a back scratcher man.
Yeah, it's kind of, he's a bit like that. I've played like 3 online games. I think I actually somehow won one. I'm rubbish at fighting games. I've never been good at fighting games, really. But
it's just practice.
Yeah, I've kind of like, I think I'm scared to say my character because you guys will go like, oh, what a terrible choice.
There's no bad
picks. I tried a few out, and the one I'm ready for this reaction then, because I don't do my research. I don't see like who should I start with. I played a few, and the one that felt most right to me is Blanka.
Oh, no, he's that's cool. Fine.
Yeah. Is that fine?
Yeah. He's really cool in this game. In fact, the player who won CEO, the tournament we were just talking about, won with Blanka.
That's what, I knew that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's
what I went for. That was your meta chasing. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I just see he has electric moves. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Blanka's cool because he's just like crouch, can just go under the fireball. Like, you just duck, you're good.
He's a trolly character, a fun character to watch because he's very frustrating to play against.
Yeah.
He's all over the place. You never know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's quite trolly, quite fun, quite annoying.
I might play a bit more Street Fighter. I'll see. I might just play the single player campaign. I know it's supposedly the weakest part of it, but I was quite enjoying just walking up to random people and saying,
so
"Do you want
to
fight?"
Isn't it? It's weird.
It's
and
so
brilliant
odd.
And
it's
just,
like kind of Yakuza, but hitting people. It's like, totally, you do that in Yakuza, don't you?
It's
but,
really clearly an influence. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of into that. I might play more, but I'm also playing a bit of Diablo.
Mm.
I'm not gonna. My favorite game of the year so far has been Tears of the Kingdom, but I'm gonna go for my second favorite game of the year so far, which is an even bigger surprise to me than Tears of the Kingdom being my favorite game of the year. And that is Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Ooh.
We've talked about this a lot before. I'm not going to go too much about it. Fallen Order, I didn't think was great. I thought it was an okay game. Jedi Survivor, I think, is very, very good. It fixes almost all the problems I had with Fallen Order. And, yeah, I just think the level design is great. The combat is fantastic. They've nailed it this time around, I think. And actually quite a good story as well. And I'm quite into old Cal Kestis now. I think he might be a good character. No, no. Whereas in the first one, I wasn't too keen on him. But yeah, I had a great time in this game. And I think it's because they just basically... I think Respawn kind of went a bit truer to their kind of DNA. And it is a lot more Titanfall than the first one was. I think they were trying to chase the Souls-iness in Fallen Order a bit too much. Whereas this one definitely has Souls-like elements. But it feels more... attuned to, like, influenced by God of War than it does Dark Souls, and I think that's why I'm into it. Like, the open level design is much more similar to God of War and has big, like, some of the later levels are stunning as well. And just, yeah,
I heard a
just
lot
very
of people
surprised.
Saying that, and it's an odd place to draw our inspiration from, but Celeste, the platforming game, because there are sections where you get your dash back if you, like, go through a little gate. Which is so, like,
there's a lot of that Titanfall DNA as well, yeah. Mm. Like, Into the Abyss, the level where you're kind of going through the factory and wall running off everything. And yeah, you can see there's definitely some aerial levels in Jedi Survivor. I would just encourage anyone, you know, like me, who was kind of maybe not too keen on the first, this one could surprise you quite a bit.
If you're listening to this when this episode comes out, you can get it for under 50 quid right now.
Oh,
Amazon, so.
There you go. Yeah. An Amazon rep.
Yeah, go check out the IGN UK deals page.
Did you play Survivor?
No, and so I've never really gotten on with Star Wars Jedi-based games.
Okay.
Because I've always found what a game has to do to a Jedi really difficult to just reconcile because... And this is one of the things I was going to ask you about, because I know that this game, they added some sort of dismemberment, right?
Yes.
Because the fantasy, like the lightsaber is supposed to, it's, you know, glides through everything, it's knife through butter, right? So I've always found it really off-putting to see Jedis
like
in video
bat,
games just sort of like, you know... eventually take hit points off of
it's supposed
thing.
To feel like a superhero, right?
Yeah,
not
it's
struggling.
It's Wolverine, right? You know, it's supposed to be able to slice through anything. So how do they tackle it in
I feel
this one?
There are a lot more fodder enemies this time around and it deals with them better. Like, it didn't deal with groups of enemies well in the first one, I thought, but this one, like, there's a load of battle droids who just you can just slice up, basically, and that feels good. But then they do combat with harder enemies that feel like, you know, they shouldn't just be dismembered straight away. Like, I don't know if they're made from harder metal, but I don't know. Like,
Beskar.
I don't know. Yeah.
Beskar battle droids.
But I know what you mean. It should
Does
feel
it really
like.
Have them?
If probably, you're like no. in a, one of the boss battles, for example, against a Jedi and you do one hit on them, it should just rip through their arm, shouldn't it? Like, they're never going to, like, you're never going to get quite around that. But
exactly,
yeah.
Right? It's really hard. They're so powerful. That weapon is so incredibly powerful as to make.
I suppose it's the same with any, like, you know, any looter shooter or any game where there's numbers flying off enemies. Like, a headshot should just kill anyone, shouldn't it? Well, it's like Warzone. If you shoot someone once, they should be dead. But they're not, are they? But I know it is like... I feel this one does do a much better job at creating that fantasy, so...
I saw a mod for it on a gameplay clip, which forces the proper dismemberment you'd expect from Star Wars into the game. And the character is just lobbing like bits off of everything, and it looks amazing.
I played it on like normal difficulty, which was a good level for. I didn't think it was too challenging at all. But like, I'd be interested if on the lowest difficulty in this one, if you can just live that fantasy and just slice through everything. But yeah, surprisingly good game. But Tears is still my favourite game of the year so far. And I feel like, you know, well, we get on to what could be the game that, the only game I can see that has a chance of overtaking that for game of the year so far. Let's go on to films. Have you seen any good films this year, Matt?
I have. I've had the luxury of seeing quite a significant amount of films in the theatre this year.
You lucky boy. As a
consequence of the role that I have. Oh. It's quite nice. Oh. You should get a job here, listeners. It's great. I'm sure
I'm sure a lot of people would love to.
And so I think that it's like primarily been a year for what I'll call like stupid spectacle, where I think that like my favourite movies of this year have been stuff like Fast X and The Flash. I actually really enjoyed a lot.
I didn't expect those two to be mentioned.
I can't believe you said that.
However, also I really like the actual best movie that is Megan, by the way, but that's not my favourite.
Was that this year?
Yeah, that was earlier this year. But no, the one I really want to talk about, because I don't think it got its due when we talked about it when it came out, but it's Guardians 3, which
I
thought was like a really poignant examination of what it is to like have a sense of self defined by other people. Like, it's a movie about people that like have problems that really like can't do self-reflection in order to be happy. And it resolves their conflicts through other people. And I remember sitting in the theater going like, this is like an actually really surprising like, I don't know, story about this concept being told through a raccoon what shoots stuff.
I will say I thought the film was decent. I had a good enough time with it. It's one of the better Marvel films seen recently, but that's, I feel like that's what sets it apart, is that I can appreciate that it is at least trying to do that. Even if it didn't completely hit it like it did for you, for me. But like, I appreciate that at least James Gunn has thought, I want to tell a story here and I want to do something. It's not just an A to B story. There is actually some themes at play here. Do you see Guardians, Wes?
No, and so I do want to, and I will do. I was put off because I'd heard it was just very sad.
It is quite sad.
I was just not in the mood for something that I knew would probably make me feel very, very sad. And so I just wanted... For a lot of this year, I've just been trying to actively avoid things that I know are just very depressing. And so, and someone told me, oh, it's quite sad. And I was like, oh, I just don't have...
Yeah. It's bittersweet. I think it's got, like, it's got some laughs.
Yeah. But it is, I wouldn't say it's ultimately a sad film. It definitely has sad bits, but you know, you won't, I don't think the primary feeling you'll have leaving that film is, oh, I'm sad. It wasn't for me anyway.
I'll definitely watch it. Disney probably doesn't want people to be saying this.
Very difficult for you to go justify going to the cinema if it's just going to go on Disney Plus within a little bit of time. Someone else pointed out that the High Evolutionary, the baddie, it's almost as if James Gunn has written the High Evolutionary to be Disney itself. Because they've, so if you'll walk down a garden path with me, in this movie, James Gunn is Rocket Raccoon, because
I think we're thinking too hard, but let's
Rocket
go.
Raccoon's the one with the creative ability where he comes up with the solution, and then the High Evolutionary like chucks him away because he can't handle the fact that he's come up with this really creative idea, and then he comes back and he's the one that solves everything. So it's like James Gunn is the one with the spark of brilliance that Disney's...
We'll never know, because he'll never admit it.
Not going to ever tell you.
Wes, have you seen any good films? Any that haven't made you sad?
Yeah, I would say my favourite film of the year so far is John Wick 4. And nice. It's,
what a wicked movie.
It's a wicked movie. I mean, it's base, absolutely.
I mean,
base,
it's an hour too long,
but and it's so brutally long. And I went to the cinema to see it with a friend, and it was, you know, it was never slows down to the point where you feel like it's a slog. But you definitely were like, come on, this is ridiculous. But
some of those scenes do get better through the feeling of exhaustion, though. Like utilizes that conceptually. Like, if you're tired of John Wick doing this, imagine how he feels having to do it.
The last 45 minutes to the hour of that film is some of the best action filmmaking I've ever seen. Like, Paris, the whole Paris section, I'm just like...
Yeah, it's crazy.
I think... I do want to rewatch that film, but I might just watch it from Paris onwards.
So,
although
what
the Berlin bit is good as well, and the Japan bit's quite good, but
it's pretty good. What I did recently, I was feeling a little sad the other day, and I was like, I'm going to watch just the best bits of John Wick 4. So I skipped forward immediately to the stairs bit and then went backwards. And it, like, watching it that way, well, only takes about 20 minutes. So.
Yeah. Well, it's the Hotline Miami bit for me.
Yeah.
Oh, that rocks. That scene is very nice.
I was sat in the cinema very close to the screen. Mm. And so was having to sort of lean back and angle my head up. And the screen, it felt, you know, like it was wrapping around me. Mm. And that scene just it blew me away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I immediately was like, that's a video game, you know. But just seeing it, sort of like one takiness of it, and you know, knowing that Keanu Reeves is doing all of this, mm. and just the cool factor, the music, I'd never seen anything in an action movie like that before.
It's brilliant.
It's just incredible.
Like, I it's something I was quite surprised I loved that much, because the other John Wick films, I think, are fine, personally. I was never on, like, the John Wick, like, hype
they're
train.
Wonderful. They're
yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, there was something about it, I'm just like, yeah, this isn't
how
hitting for me.
Is it?
But, yeah, this one did.
The fourth movie is the best one.
Yeah,
has that
I don't
ever
know if there's
happened
many
before?
I mean, that's something we'd have to... I'd have to actually...
Is it the best one?
I think it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I think so.
I think
listener
is,
question,
personally.
What series is the fourth one the best one?
Kingdom of Crystal. No.
No.
Die Hard.
Die Hard 4.0. Terminator 4. No. I don't know. I don't know if there is... I mean, technically, A New Hope is episode 4.
I was
4.
Thinking that. That's the cheat answer.
That is cheating. That's definitely cheating.
I don't know. Yeah,
that's a really good question, isn't it?
Rocky 4? No. I don't know if there is. Maybe we can write in. Is there a film that's apart from John Wick?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Let's not. We're going to spend ages thinking about that. Maybe it'll pop up in a bit.
Yeah, we'll get it
by
the end. It can also be game, too. What game is the fourth one, the best one?
That'll be easier.
But
I think
that's
got to
be
like
easier.
Resident Evil.
Uncharted.
Wait, yeah, it's
Uncharted
incredible.
For me. Yeah. But there we go. My favourite film. I've got a couple of cheat ones this time ago. These are my shout-outs. Tar. Technica came out last year, but in the UK it came out this year. So I'm counting
Love
Tar.
Love a technicality.
Tar is... The more I think about Tar, it's one of... I think it's actually maybe my favourite film last year. I think Top Gun might still be, but Tar, the more I think about it, if you haven't seen it, like...
That's brain and heart choice, isn't it?
Like, yeah, like, it's just incredible filmmaking. Like, the tone of that film is dark, and Cate Blanchett is phenomenal. I haven't rewatched it. I feel like I could rewatch it now, but it's not one you're going to put on over and over again.
And it's got Monster Hunter in it.
I was just going to say, isn't that the one with the random Monster Hunter?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Apart from that, no, it's all great. Yeah, I might watch Tar again. My other shout out is a film that's actually quite critically maligned, but I think is brilliant, is Babylon. Damien Chazelle's new film that, again, came out last year, but technically, yeah. I've watched that twice, and it's just the sort of film I love, like 3 hours of coked up mayhem. in the vein of like Wolf of Wall Street or Boogie Nights, but set in the Golden Age Hollywood. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. It's good. The first 5 minutes of diarrhea. An elephant has diarrhea all over someone. So that's the sort of film you're getting into. But my actual pick, a sign that officially came out this year, Across the Spider-Verse.
Great movie.
Into the Spider-Verse, I think, is brilliant. But I'm not in the, like, all this is all-time greatest film ever. Across Spider-Verse, I actually thought was a step up. It's not as contained a film, obviously. It's very much a part one of a part two story. But I like the animation in this. It's been like well documented now, especially the Gwen Stacy stuff is just incredible to look at. The music, like that score, I've been listening to a lot. Like, it's just phenomenal. I don't know what we spoke about it recently, so I don't know what there is to add. But if you haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse in the cinema, you
what
can probably still
you
catch
still
it.
Absolutely can.
It, like, is one of those, and I hate that thing of like, see it on the biggest screen possible.
I think
but
I've
this
literally
is one.
Said that in the show.
This is one. That it really does benefit from the sound and just like being able to see this in the biggest screen possible. But yeah,
I also finally saw Beau's Afraid on this weekend, which is...
What did you think?
It's the best movie of the year.
Why didn't you pick that then?
did you just remember it?
No, it's wicked. Not in a way that I wouldn't recommend on the IGN podcast.
I think I really like it.
Yeah, I also think I really like it.
But not also certain. There was a good 45 minutes to an hour in the middle where I was like, I don't like this. But yeah. Start and the end, I really do love.
Yeah, is it the bit that's kind of the play within the play? Did that kind
the
of...
The forest section me was a dip. But the start and I think the first like half an hour is like
the world
excruciatingly brilliant
is
comedy,
fascinating. It's utterly ridiculous.
But again, like I'm very wary of recommending that film to anybody,
and also not even people that are really like fans of Ari Aster as well. Like I wouldn't say if you liked Hereditary or Midsommar, this would definitely be up your alley.
Like the thing I recommend is more like synecdoche New York. But yeah, check out that as well if you want a weird time. Let's just move on because it might be a slightly shorter episode than usual this week, but that's just, you know, we've got to keep up this pace. TV, has anyone got anything that isn't Succession?
I do.
Yeah, me too.
Why can't we just all agree on it? Right, mine's Succession. It's brilliant. We did a spoiler bit a couple weeks ago. If you haven't seen Succession, watch Succession. It's, I think I put it now officially like my fourth favourite TV show ever. I think it's nails the landing. It's hilarious. It's heartbreaking. It's maybe some of the best acting I've ever seen in my life. Watch Succession. That's my pick.
Check
Matt, what's yours?
Get the chance. This year has been incredible if you're into the genre of...
Anime?
It's looking great for anime,
was it not
honestly.
Been a good anime?
It's
so
been
sorry.
An off year. A lot of stuff has come out, but nothing that really has struck me as incredibly exciting. No, if you're into the genre of athletics-based Korean game shows,
of course.
There have been two incredible ones. Mm-hmm. The first got a lot more press. It was called Physical 100. Mm-hmm. Really fun. It's about people that are from different backgrounds of athletics or bodybuilding trying to compete to see which one of their physiques is the all-round best.
Okay.
That's the premise. It doesn't necessarily live up to that.
I've heard about it. I've not actually watched it. So is it a little bit like an actual, like, more... A less silly... I don't know. Is it like a battle... Is it like 100 people, like, drop out? Is it like that?
So you're eliminated from rounds if you, you know, can't keep up with the pace of it. Like, the first one... The first challenge is probably a decent representation of this. Everybody has to hang from rafters for as long as possible.
Okay.
And so all of them are up there. And they're in, like, two squads. But it's... Just whichever one can hang from the rafters as long as possible without any support is the one that wins that challenge.
Okay.
And it's stuff
so
like that.
So it's like proper... Is it like proper serious tone or is
no,
it quite...
No, it's quite
it's
fun. It's light, yeah.
Okay.
But the exhaustion of the contestants, you can absolutely feel it. Like, by the end, the stuff that they've had to do...
Yeah.
There's one where they constantly just have to roll a boulder up a hill in a... it's literally a Greek myth. But it's them in pairs of... Four, and they're all like
pairs of four,
teams of four. it's just four lads that are doing it in sets. Oh, whatever. Anyway,
groups of four.
What is it? What's a pair of four? A group? Is it just?
It's just a group.
A group.
Nice. A team. A group. Set.
So,
foursome?
Do you mean two teams of four?
No, they're in teams, but it's each one of them individually doing it.
Okay, they're rolling a boulder up a hill.
And
this
so
is as bad as the,
they're like they're
Zelda
being,
scale.
They're being egged on by the people that are surrounding them. Like, they're exhausted.
I mean, we all know the boulder's only weigh 10 apples.
Exactly. So what's the problem? but that is just the first one that has been really good this year. The actual best one right now that I'm watching is a show called Siren Survive the Island, which is about teams of four, six teams of four, that are essentially playing capture the flag. They all have a base each, and when an alarm rings they suddenly have to play capture the flag, and if their flag is taken,
and this is a whole show based around this,
and there are like trials and tribulations in between it, but it is knackering, the like extremes that they have to go to, and the like there's like Machiavellian deal trading as well, because in order for your base not to be taken, you'd have to make a deal with somebody else.
So is it a little bit like Survivor with Capture the Flag?
Exactly. It is utterly wicked.
Sounds
it's
like
just
Red versus Blue.
Now.
If you ever watched
totally.
That.
Yeah, go to Blood Gulch.
I need to check out the Physical 100. I did like the look of, just to say, kind of to half watch. But yeah,
it's a lot of fun. Yeah,
yeah.
It's got like a really good cast of characters too. Like it makes legends out of the people that are on the show. Like you suddenly feel like, oh my god, I can't believe they've, you know, managed to pull out the extra bit of energy, right?
Yeah. I get
it's
it.
It's sports, just storytelling them.
Seen any good TV, Wes?
I mentioned this show last time I was on, which is Silo,
which I've since watched quite a lot of.
Well, I'm interested to hear what you think. It on Apple Apple TV. It is for me the easily some of the best sci-fi around, and it is we're on the last episode of the first season this week. So I'm incredibly excited to find out how they resolve it.
I do need to check it out. I let my Apple subscription end because I was like, well, there's nothing until Severance season two. But now I'm going to be like, oh, I'm just have to get
it
for a month.
I reckon it's worth it. But also because nobody's really watching it at the minute, I don't think that you're going to struggle for spoilers. Like I think when Severance 2 comes out, like, you know,
I want to check out Shrinking as well, the Harrison Ford show. I've heard good things about that.
Yeah, Apple TV.
Yeah, I know.
Is it kept up though, Silo? Like, you haven't watched the finale yet, right?
No, that's this Friday. Okay. It's tomorrow. For me, it has. I've heard some people say it sort of dips a little bit. I never really felt that because I've just been all in, I think, from the start. But yeah, I don't think there's anything that looks quite like it, that feels quite like it. Very claustrophobic, really atmospheric.
The thing that I don't think we conveyed the last time we talked about it is that it's like people are stuck in this underground silo, and it gets a very Fallout vibe as a feeling of that. Like they've been there for generations, but the world building that it does around that is really interesting. Like it's not just enough that they're under there; it's that like the floors of this silo are so massive that people just can't go from, like, you know, the top to the bottom. It becomes like a massive investment of energy to do that. So like if you have a day off, you're probably going to spend one of them just going to where you need to go. So there are people that like their whole job is to just send messages. And like the idea that like stuff like paper is really short supply because they don't have trees that will be able to produce it, so like paper's a luxury good, like that kind of world building stuff, it peppers it throughout the show in a way that keeps you really interested. Like, when am I going to next learn about something weird about the how this society functions? It's so cool. Like, the plot, I think, is fine. It's kind of like a mystery story. But where it's set is the thing that keeps me coming back.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, it's so many little details that just, you know, you look at and on their own, you're like, oh, that's cool. But so many of them add up and you just sort of really believe it's an actual place. Like they've got it's one of those rare TV shows where I spend just as much time looking at the set as I do the characters.
Yeah, totally.
Just like what did the rooms all look unique? The walls even there's been so much care and thought put into the walls. So many cracks that you notice looking at the walls as everything is sort of
there's
cracking
like some
and
exposed rebar in some of them as well. And it's like, yeah, because you can't get plaster to be able to do it. And even if you could, would you do it in this room that's at like the middle? You would use it at the top if you have such a finite resource.
Does anyone have to roll a boulder up a hill?
Maybe.
Well, there's a lot of things that could happen. Spoilers, there might be boulders.
It's really great.
I need to check it out.
And I was delighted to hear that the second season was confirmed.
So
Apple seemed to be quite good at that. Like, not just abandoning things. Like actually,
I would love to know just like what the metric for success Apple has for these things, because it clearly has had a lot of money spent on it, and time and energy. Looks fantastic.
It's got Tim Robbins in it.
Tim Robbins is fantastic in it. But it just doesn't feel like, because it's on Apple TV, it just doesn't feel like lots of people are watching it. So I'd be fascinated to know the economics of what they're doing with their site, with their big budget stuff, with their sci-fi stuff. Because to me, it just doesn't make sense at all. Like they've got to be losing a huge amount of money on this. Foundation's another one where
it shocks me how, like, back in the days of like regular network TV, when shows were getting like 11 million on the like Nielsen and were getting cancelled because that wasn't enough. And it's like what's considered a success now is so much lower. Like that, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. As I said, Succession, my easily my show of the year, but also shout out to The Last of Us. They did it, I think. They did a very successful adaptation of that show. So, yeah.
Let's see what those next seasons are like, because they got their work cut out.
They have, although I do adore Part 2, but, you know, let's not get into that debate right now, because we don't have time.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
John, I'm going to mix up a stick with TV. Let's just go what other TV shows you're looking forward to for the rest of the year. I'll kick it off. I'm going to go with Masters of the Air.
I don't know what that is.
Another Apple TV show that hasn't got a date yet. It's meant to come out this year. It is the new Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg produced World War II, like Band of Brothers style show. And it's about, I think it's the 8th Air Division, the US Army. And it stars Austin Butler and Barry Keoghan in the two lead roles. And
that's great.
Yeah,
I don't think any proper
trailers have come out for it yet, but like Banner Brothers, one of the best TV shows I've ever seen. And The Pacific is okay. It didn't quite capture that same magic for me.
It's we have Band of Brothers at home.
Yeah, but Masters of the Air, yet again, Apple putting the budget in. It's estimated to have like a $300 million budget, this show.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have faith in Spielberg and Hanks to create, like, I don't know how it's going to have to, I assume they'll get on the ground at some point, because, like, however many 8-10 episodes, wherever it's going to be of them just in planes, seems like it might not be great, but obviously
they got a refuel.
RAF units, but Air Force units do go on the ground as well. But yeah, it's obviously based on true stories and true people, and I'm still a sucker for anything World War II, so yeah, I'm hoping this is going to be very good, and that definitely will need to get that Apple subscription at some point, won't I? But we actually know very little about the show, apart from, you know, the book it's based on, but I'm very excited because, yeah, should be amazing. There we go. What TV are you looking forward to, Matt? Any more Korean physical shows?
Sure. That's the best thing about them, is that you never know about them, and then they suddenly drop in, and they're always great. That legendary place that the end of the map reveals is only legendary till someone proves it real. The One Piece adaptation.
Oh. Is that this year?
It is going to be this year. It's going to be August 31st.
So is this a thing where you're genuinely excited or you're more morbidly curious?
I am cautiously optimistic in the same way that I was about the Cowboy Bebop adaptation.
And how did that go?
They put out a really good trailer for Cowboy Bebop at the time as well. Like, I do still think the trailer really holds up. And they've done it again with the One Piece one. They're like, CGI.
They made a good 2 minutes of this.
Exactly, yeah. If the only thing that comes of it is that it's pretty good. The CGI does look a little bit wonky, but it's, you know, they were never going to make skin stretching look good. What do you two know about One Piece, by the way?
I know it's got the monkey Luffy boy, right?
Sure.
Who can stretch. And it's got a lot of crazy pirate characters.
That's all you need, basically.
There we go. It's like Captain Pugwash, but anime, right?
Sure, yeah.
I've just never understood the name of it. Like, what is grammatically nonsensical?
Yeah.
What's One Piece?
Okay, so people...
does it literally mean?
There have been several thousand chapters of this, and yet they've not told you what the One Piece is yet. It's the treasure that they're looking for, but nobody knows what the One Piece is.
You're never going to know. It's going to be a Pulp Fiction thing.
I know.
You don't know what's
in
the case.
Yeah, there are a lot of theories about what the One Piece is, but...
Is it like One Piece of Treasure?
Or One Piece
Maybe.
Of Chicken?
Is, that,
piece,
what, is it, that the phrase that they're lifting it, the name from?
I...
Because that, I suppose, on some level, that would
because it's traditionally pieces
to understand
of
that.
Or is it like a One Piece chicken and chips meal?
Sure, absolutely.
That would be great.
The current leading theory, I don't think this is a spoiler because I haven't gotten there, is that the world is fractured. So it would be a way of putting the world back into One Piece would be the
They're trying to restore Pangaea.
Be a little flip.
I prefer if it was just a piece of like... favorite chicken one piece
or it's just a bit of gold. It's like a big bit of
that's
gold,
the ultimate
gold
title bit of gold.
I started watching One Piece during the pandemic because like it's notoriously very very long and I happen to have quite a lot of time on my hands and it is quite a lot better than I anticipated. Like, it is a kid's show, but it's just got an extra little like couple layers that consistently make it really interesting.
Okay.
And this series won't get to any of that. Like, the arcs that they're adapting are fun, but they're not as interesting as they could be. So it will do some interesting stuff, even if it succeeds at all. Some good stuff is in there, but it's not where the series has its highlights. So it's going to be disappointing anyway, even if it is good.
Yeah,
so,
I probably won't watch it. I'm not going to lie.
I'll wait for you to tell me what the One Piece is.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be at least 10 years.
We'll all be dead. We'll all be dead.
Yeah.
Wes, what are you looking forward to on the television front?
I'm going to stick with Apple TV. I feel like I should be on commission or something. But,
this has been an Apple-heavy podcast.
It has. I doubt anyone's spoken this much about Apple TV before on a podcast. But Foundation Series 2 starts in July, so next month. And I'm very, very excited about that. The trailers make it look great. I think, you know, all the sci-fi stuff Apple's doing, the trailers make it look great. Season one, I thought, was brilliant and terrible in a weird way. Parts of it were wonderful, genuinely wonderful. They had this amazing idea, which is different from the books it's based on, to create the Emperor... of the galaxy, essentially, three people, like a clone of themselves at different stages
of
life.
So, like Palpatine,
sort of. But imagine Palpatine.
Somehow, the Foundation return.
Imagine Palpatine, but at there was the Palpatine we know, Granddad Palpatine, and grandson Palpatine, and they were all alive at the same time, and the middle one was like the boss, and they get old and die, but it keeps going
Have you seen Dark, the German series on Netflix?
No.
Okay, interesting. Anyway, carry on.
Okay, but that sort of idea was brilliant in season one. The rest of it was pretty crap, but season two I think is going to lean a lot more into that, and it's going to flesh it out. So I'm really excited to see that, and it looks incredible. Like, it looks like
again, I heard
$300 million sort of show. It's just incredible. Like Hollywood level Star Wars quality movie.
There's
CGI.
All these big sci-fi shows I've just not found time for, like Foundation, Silo, The Expanse. I know it's meant to be good, never watched it.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. I didn't love it, but
what?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah,
that's a whole other thing.
Do you know what? Let's go on to films. Why not? I'm just doing this in any which way works. So I'm going to stick with Apple TV as well.
Really?
Because they have got a lot of money for films. It won't be a surprise to anyone. I mean, there's a lot of incredible films coming out this year by the looks of it. Hopefully, a lot of them are good. But I just can't look past Killers of the Flower Moon from Scorsese.
Sure.
3.5 hours of pure joy. Pure joy. I wish it was, there were rumors it was 4 hours, then they cut it back to 3.5 hours because Scorsese's a coward, never made a film in his life. The first trailer for this I thought was phenomenal. Can you find the wolf in this picture? What a great end line to a trailer. I just can't wait for this film. Leonardo DiCaprio kind of trying to solve, it's based on, I don't know if it's 100% accurate to the true story of what happened. I've tried to look as little as I can into it, so I don't want, although it's a true case, I don't want it spoiled for me what actually happened. But looking into investigating these basically murders of these Native Americans about 100 years ago, I believe. But yeah, I cannot wait for this film. It is on Apple TV, but I will definitely be heading to the cinema to see that because I do want to see my Scorsese's on the biggest screen possible. But yeah, I cannot wait for this film. People have seen it at Cannes like 2 months ago, a month ago now.
You should have gone.
It's not out until like October. Oh yeah, I should have just popped over to the Cannes Film Festival and asked, can I see the Scorsese?
You're in the media.
Can I please go see the Scorsese film?
One ticket to Martin's film, please.
I've got to wait till what, October, November? God, life's hard, isn't it?
A lot of people this year have also talked about how this is. I know they said this was a bad year for anime, but there's a show called Vinland Saga that got a second season that's really incredible. It's like quite a big step back from the previous one. It's a lot less action. It's quite a lot of like just chill, introspective thinking. But it's historical. It's about like the Viking invasion of England, and you can ruin it for yourself by learning a little bit too much about English history. Like you can,
I can tell you how it would end.
Yeah,
I mean,
So yeah, like actually trying to learn too much about the thing will spoil it for you. Something that actually, yeah, definitely occurs to me. Movies for me though that I'm excited about. It really is the double feature. It is. Do you do
Oppenheimer?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What a bop.
Which one, if you had to pick one, Barbie or Oppenheimer?
Oh, God, I'm leaning towards Barbie, honestly.
Yeah, I think I'm still... If you told me I could only see one, it would be Oppenheimer, but I do really want to see Barbie.
Ever.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that will last forever.
Yeah. I feel like it's more... And I trust Greta Gerwig. I think she's absolutely fantastic. But there is a small... There is a chance that film can be very fun, but ultimately, you know... Forgettable, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Whereas Oppenheimer, I'd prefer to take the risk. It could be dull. I don't think it will be, but I don't know. I think more, it's more my sort of film, Oppenheimer, and everything I've heard about it, and you know created the bomb, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, imagine it's bad and it doesn't do well. It'd be like the biggest box office bomb.
Or God. If it's good, everyone be like, it's the bomb. Yeah. You know, it's just...
Oh, it's already...
Those are going to be great, I think.
I was going to say Oppenheimer. I don't know how much hope I have in it. My excitement for it is more coming from a sort of morbid curiosity angle, I suppose, because it's so long. I can see them really messing up the sort of, you know, the judgment the film has to eventually make on Oppenheimer, on the whole, on the work.
Yeah,
like it, that, and it's going to be fascinating to see how hard it comes down.
Yeah, what the prevailing feeling at the end is. Is it like, I feel like it's going to be very somber at the end, like. I do trust Nolan, and like he's got an incredible track record, Christopher. And I feel like Tenet was not great. It was messy.
No, it's not a very good movie.
It was messy. There's things about it I really enjoy. I think some of it's like truly I've not seen before, like the backwards, some of the fighting and the choreography, and it look, and the score I think is brilliant. But like, it's not a successful film, I don't think. But I feel like everyone was just like kind of waiting for him to have that film so they could jump in. I know Dark Knight Rises isn't beloved. I still think it's a pretty good film. It's just not The Dark Knight.
I saw it opening weekend and people clapped.
So, yeah, but like, I felt like I trust him, especially like he did Dunkirk, and I think he did Dunkirk in the right way. He didn't go full... There is moments where it is a bit jingoistic, but he didn't go full like this is a great celebration. He was a bit like this was a fail, like this was should never have happened.
I think the determining factor for me, like, you know, I'll see it with my own eyes, but then I really just want to read what the Japanese press has to say. Like, how will it play there?
I feel like he's a smart man. He's not going to be like this. It's not going to be like a glowing biography of Oppenheimer. Sure. Is it? I feel like it's going to be very somber.
Perspective of like framing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, doing this narrative through this lens rather than a different one.
He is just a complicated figure as well, isn't he? He's not necessarily a bad person. He just was involved in this terrible thing that happened. We'll learn all soon.
That seems like the movie.
Exactly.
Seems like the plot of
and
the film.
It's only a couple of weeks away.
The same day as Barbie.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Back to me, and I'm going to... It's finally time to talk about our most anticipated games, and it's going to be no surprise because I think literally a week... Was it 2 weeks ago now? I talked about how Starfield is my most anticipated game on Earth right now, and I'm only... The 45-minute presentation only made me more excited. I was worried before that, but I was so excited after it, and that's all I wanted. I hope it's the game I dream it is. Obviously... It's never going to quite... Yeah, I'm going to be disappointed in some way, but I just want it to at least do, you know, 90% of what I want it to do, right? And from that deep dive, it looks like there's a full-on, like, exploration arc to this game, and that's what I want. I want to explore these planets. I want to talk to people. The combat didn't look... The shooting looked okay to me. Oh, I need to play it to really tell, but I'm hopeful I can... I want to do as little combat in that game, I think, as possible. I want to take as many speech points as I can
Agreed.
Speak my way through that game, get my way through all the situations, and yeah, I just... What more can I really say? Starfield is my... Like, it's been my most anticipated game for probably 2 to 3 years now, and yeah, I can't believe we're only, what, just...
A couple of months.
Two, three months away from it. Yeah. Can't wait.
That Starfield Direct, I mean, it did such an incredible job of dragging the conversation onside, right? I mean, people were sort of down on it, I think, ever since the previous year E3 thing that they did. But this just turned it around. I think everyone seems to be pretty excited for it, saying it looks really good.
Yeah, it does look like what they said years ago, what Todd Howard said, that Skyrim in space, and it kind of does look like that, and that's...
Did you see the thing Todd Howard said about 10% of the planets having life on them?
Yeah, that's still 100 planets.
Yeah, and the idea being, you know, I mean, that's space. And I thought that was really interesting because it suggests there's going to be, and he's likened the sort of gameplay loop feel to Red Dead Redemption 2, and a lot of that is
music to my ears.
You're just sort of like. Moving through a space, aren't you? Just sort of the game feel is like I'm going somewhere, not necessarily much happening, but it's just such an incredible world to move through. And I think again, there's going to be a lot of Starfield, which is I'm going to just go on to that planet, and if there's no life, that's fine. I'm just exploring an alien world, and it's kind of cool. And then just, you know, leave after a while, and that will be fine.
I'm going to find some enjoyment in this game. I know I will. And yeah, cannot be more excited. Matt, what you got?
So right up until I played the demo, I was pretty excited for Lies of P. Like, I'm a Souls guy.
Yeah.
And I was let down by just one thing in particular that was like...
His nose doesn't grow.
Exactly. That's it. I just need a full-on Pinocchio, man, if I'm going to play it.
Skill issue.
It just... the roll, the roll's just a little bit wrong. It's just
no,
not quite.
No, you got a wonky roll.
It's just got a wonky roll.
Is this the dodge they said they're going to fix?
I think if they can actually fix it, if it doesn't like disrupt the mechanics of the game entirely.
The wonky roll.
It's just not right. It just doesn't feel good.
Has anything overtaken that as your most anticipated, or is it still?
Yes, I'm pretty excited by what they've shown of Super Mario Wonder.
Okay.
Which we got a little bit of a demo from at the recent Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
It's like, I can imagine a world, like a previous history of video games, where they took a totally different, like diverging path at some point, where we didn't invest into 3D graphics, we just heightened the graphics of 2D platformers. We were like, oh, that's what games are, like 2D platformers. We just make them look like more detailed. This is the game I feel like probably would have existed at that point. It's the first time I felt that, like the quality of animation or just like the amount of like depth put into small movements, or like, you know, when he goes through a pipe, his hat is kind of outside of it and then he goes back and grabs it, like that, those kind of details, that sort of stuff that is just like hyper polish in small places. This stuff that just like that sends me, mate. I'll play it.
I love Mario. I was hoping for an Odyssey successor. I wanted the new big 3D Mario, but I'll still take a 2D Mario. I'll give it a play.
I'm sure it's in the works.
Yeah, you'd imagine they're going to make another Mario game. Imagine if Nintendo just like more Mario.
Done with them.
Done.
And
boring.
That was the last Zelda.
Done with them. We're going all in. All
new
Kirby
stuff.
Games. What's yours, Wes?
Well, Starfield is definitely up there. If I'm not going Starfield, I'm going Baldur's Gate 3.
Mm.
Which mercifully,
even sooner than we thought it would be.
They smartly brought the PC release date forward a month, which is clearly to try and avoid Starfield.
That must be very soon then, right? Is it?
Yeah, it's coming out early August. Starfield's effective release date is 1st of September.
Mm-hmm.
And Baldur's Gate 3 was due out on the 31st of August. So, you know, I was faced with the prospect of Baldur's Gate 3 coming out and then the next day Starfield coming out. And it's just it's just impossible to play both of those games at the same time because they're all in sort of games, aren't they?
Exactly.
So
we'll have a good, 3 weeks before Gamescom to try and get through that.
Mm-hmm.
They are smart to move it because August is actually quite relatively barren.
Relatively, yeah. I mean, there's ongoing forever games that will be popular still, like people will be playing Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
Just
announced an update to Hunt Showdown that I'm really excited for.
I saw that has boosted the player count higher than it's ever had.
It's a really exciting update. Like, I don't know if anybody plays Hunt, but
I've heard all about it.
So it's a boss that's out in the wild, and so normally they've been closed off in locations. So if you want to attack this boss, you're basically just open to anybody, like that could snipe you from anywhere. And so it's going to make really dynamic gameplay choices basically constantly whenever you try and do it in a way that just isn't like the game has been up until this point. I'm very excited to check it out.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. That's what we've most enjoyed this year and what we're most looking forward to. Let's see at the end of the year how that changes when we give out some awards. Let us know what you are most looking forward to for the rest of the year. IGN_UK feedback @IGN.com. Some other people have been in touch, though. What crazy topics have we got this week? I think, Matt, you may have the first email.
And I've got a message here from Kai McKenzie. Hello. Who says, hi, team. Long time, first time, etc. That normally is just the end of it, isn't it?
Hello.
It's not etc. if that's the end of the sentence, Kai.
Well, there could be more.
There could be. The mention of my local shit town, High Wycombe, of which I'm a former resident on the pod last week.
I will say that Kai said that we haven't called it a shit town.
Mm.
I don't think I've been to High Wycombe. Could be okay.
I have, but I have no lasting memory of it.
Okay, yeah.
On the pod last week, got me thinking about obscure towns that you might have seen in movies or TV shows. There's also quite a few establishing shots throughout Black Mirror that feature High Wycombe, as well as a mention of it in the paparazzi episodes of the latest series. The station also made an appearance in The World's End. Respect the Sea and Duck Hunt.
Any obscure... my hometown, Enfield in North London, famous for the Enfield Haunting.
Very nice.
What else is there? Oh, I know. So I'm quite near Edmonton in North London. The school I went to is in Edmonton. And a couple of things, the most infamous one now actually is there's some big like tower blocks right near my school. And a certain Welsh rock band we don't talk about anymore filmed a music video for a song called Shinobi versus Dragon Ninja on the roof of that. Wow. So I used to walk past that going, that's really cool. And then I walked past it going, that was right near my school. So that's not ideal. But also Frank Spencer from Some Mothers Do Heaven did the famous like roller skate scene down the things right there as well. So wow, what a place for high entertainment.
Some might say. Yeah. So I also used to live very near to a town called Letchworth that is also visible in The World's End, which it's the club that they go to that is actually a cinema. And there's also another pub that used to be called The Colonnade that's now called The Platform. But it used to advertise itself as like, oh, we were the two-headed dog in The World's End. And like nobody cared. Like, because nobody...
Have they rebranded yet?
No,
they... They really should.
Yeah.
Be smart.
Like, they had a sign outside that was like, oh, yeah, we're this. And, like, no one ever...
I only ever saw it once, and I didn't love it.
It's not great, no. It's It does the... all right, hot take about The World's End. the foreshadowing that's in Shaun is really good. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that it sets... Like, it's not the... primary thing that's happening in those scenes. I think The World's End, the beginning of it, is just saying like, here's what's going to happen in the movie.
You're like,
just do a movie instead.
It's like, not really subtext, is it? It's just like text.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Where's anyone?
I'm just really racking my brains. I can't think of, like, the places I've lived are so impossibly boring that I can't imagine anyone would use them for anything. Like, I lived in Croydon for a long time. And I can't think of anything.
There must have been some things in Croydon.
I mean, I can't think of any. It's so uninspiring. I can't think of any situation where...
If you know anything that was shot in Croydon, right into IGN
Been, I'd love to know.
Oh, actually. There we go. Bandersnatch Black Mirror was apparently some of it was filmed in Croydon. There we go. Apparently some of the Dark Knight Rises and the Da Vinci Code was, as well as Peep Show.
What?
No, I don't know if
I mean, Peep Show, maybe.
That makes sense.
Dark Knight Rises? Well, what bit of that was in Croydon?
Apparently IMDb.
I've got to know that.
Yeah.
That is something I'm
We'll do some research on that.
I would like to know, for a listener question as well, what's the weirdest thing that's been filmed in your town?
Yeah. Was a certain Welsh band there. Where's I believe you have an email here.
This is from James Griffiths. Hi team, quick question for someone who's never played many Final Fantasy games. Should I buy 16 or 7 Remake? I have the hankering to play a good JRPG and could buy either, but if that's the style of game I want to play, what should I go for? I did play 15. I got a voucher for game when I left a job on the week it came out, so I decided to buy it and I did enjoy it. Take care and respect the sea. James from Stoke.
Always respect the sea.
Mm-hmm. I still don't understand that, by the way.
Am I the only person who's played both of those?
Yeah, I'm probably.
So I'm the only person with a valid... No. I do think 7 Remake is a much better game, personally. The only thing I would give 16 over 7 is that it is a complete game. And you're probably getting a bit more... for your money, slightly story-wise, hours-wise. Maybe I'm misremembering. But 7 Remake, I think, is just a much better game, a Final Fantasy game. And I'm by no means the Final Fantasy expert around here. But I enjoyed 7 Remake a lot more. I think it's got slightly more interesting action combat and actual party system it uses. I mean, I'm not one to talk about the story of Final Fantasy as much, but I enjoyed it. It's just you're not getting a finished story. And by the end, you might be quite confused and waiting for parts 2 and 3, whereas Final Fantasy 16, you are getting a good story, I think, and it wraps up quite nicely. So that's the only thing I would say. If you want a full, complete story you can enjoy, go 16. But 7 Remake is a better game, in my opinion.
I say save your money, get Yakuza Like a Dragon.
That's not the question. But yeah, that's my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think so. I think I'm right. I've got an email here from Josh Gallimore who says, "Hey all, I found a really shit thumbnail on Netflix." It's good we're getting sent these just so we can amend them. The image Netflix chose to use for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is a blurry shot of Tom Cruise pencil diving into a tube of water, which looks fucking rubbish. It does look quite blurry. It's quite an odd choice of image. Josh says, "I've searched Google for the film name and no similar image has popped up. I've never seen the film, but does the moment pictured have a huge impact on the plot?" I will say that that is the big stunt from that film. It's the best bit in the movie. Yeah. A lot of people really love Rogue Nation. I actually think it's not as good as the film's either side of it. It's not Fallout and it's not Ghost Protocol, in my opinion. I still really enjoy it, but I will say this is the big stunt from the film, which is actually quite horrible to watch because it's like Tom Cruise has to hold his breath for several minutes and it's quite panic inducing.
Yeah, when you know there's no way that they could fake it, he's really doing it.
Like, I know what they're trying to do here. You know, for four, you would show him hanging off the Burj Khalifa or something, which instantly you're like, oh, that's Tom Cruise hanging off the Burj Khalifa. But in this, it is just a blurry like man going into some water and you're not really
sure. So he's going in, he's not coming out.
No. He's going in. But it is a weird choice. I will give it that.
Is this the four the rule? Is the fourth one the best?
Oh.
Ooh,
I was just thinking because I can't actually remember exactly which one is the fourth one.
There's an argument it is. I really love three. It doesn't have the big stunt.
Which one is four? Remind me.
Four is Ghost Protocol. That's the one where he's climbing up the Burj Khalifa. It is top three. I think there's an argument that Fallout is actually the best film of them all. Fallout is very well constructed. The stunts are incredible and has a good plot. Three doesn't really have the big stunt that you'd want for Mission Impossible, but Philip Seymour Hoffman is an incredible villain
really,
in that.
Really good. Yeah.
Where's the rabbit's foot?
There's an argument to be made that the first one is the best one, but it's a very different kind of movie.
From like four onwards, they changed it. Like Tom Cruise realized, I'm just going to do a massive stunt and turn the whole film around this, and it works, to be fair. Four, there's an argument to be made that four could be the best.
Mm.
It's in the top three ones, but yeah, it's a good point. Very good. I'm glad we've thought about that.
Yeah, maybe got a little bit of closure on that before the end of the episode.
But anyway, Josh just ends with, anyway, what's the worst film poster or promotional material you've seen? It doesn't have to be for a film, I suppose. Is there a game?
Oh, I remember I had this running joke on Twitter where, do you remember the movie The Festival starring one of the Inbetweeners?
I don't, but it sounds
exactly
awful.
It was a really bad poster of the guy from The Inbetweeners just holding his hand up as if like he was having fun at a festival. But every time I saw it, I would make a little video of me giving him a high five.
No.
Yeah.
You had some fun. Look, you probably had more fun with that than anyone who watched the film.
Totally.
I'm trying to think of like bad. Every time I look at that key art for the Golem game, I'm like, what were we doing?
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there must be loads of examples of like bad game like covers and stuff like that. Like back in the day when like game like actual physical covers, some of them are truly shocking.
Mm.
But yeah, that's another good one. Maybe people can write in IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. Any terrible posters or like covers for games?
I can't think. I mean, the old school ones are terrible.
Yeah.
But they're of an era terrible, so they all were.
Yeah.
Modern ones. The Golem one is bad.
Mm.
I mean, it's not a terrible cover, but the GoldenEye, famously, cover.
It looks like he's got a big thumb.
Yeah.
I mean, also hilariously, there is the Akami box art that has the IGN logo on it.
That was on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, but that makes it good. So.
Yeah. Mad that can happen. Anyway, good episode. I enjoyed that. I've got to pick a bit of music to play at the end. I'll pick something. I won't waste
Barbie
people's
Girl.
Time. Thing.
We've
got
before,
to save Barbie Girl for the Barbie podcast. I'll pick something. Mystery. You'll enjoy it. I don't know. What a lovely time. Say goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah, see ya.
Bye. Thank you.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.